so you have this bunch of equations, and there you need some constitutive laws to link B, E, D, and H. And a simple-minded way to do it is to give a scalar function little h depending on the field D and B. So D and B are valued in R3. So it's a scalar function defined in R3, and capital E and capital H are just the partial derivative of little h with respect to D and B. Okay, and so once you know capital E and capital H as a function of D and B, you have a consistent system of evolution equation with these constraints that are automatically satisfied when they are satisfied at the time zero, because the time derivatives are balanced by curls, right? So this is a general framework. So of course, the simplest model is the Maxwell equation, where you take a quadratic function h. So 1/2 of d squared plus v squared. Of course, the physical constant have been normalized to be to 1. And so with this rule, you get that E is equal to D, H is equal to B, and you get the familiar homogeneous Maxwell equation. So what is Bornfeld? So Bornfeld was born in 70 years ago. And the idea was to use a non-quadratic function H, which is given by this funny formula. So it's a square root of 1 plus d squared plus b squared plus d cross b squared. And I will explain in a moment why this funny formula was used. But you can already see that in this square root, you have two quadratic terms, d squared plus b squared, and a quartic term, d cross b squared. So if you consider weak fields, small fields, approaching zero, you see that the leading term in the expansion will be 1 plus d squared plus d squared over 2. And therefore, since the constant 1 is not relevant, so you get the Maxwell equation back. So the Bornfeld model is just a nonlinear correction to Maxwell, which is completely consistent with Maxwell when the fields are small. Okay? And actually, of course, there are some physical units to put, and the Bornfeld, they fit. You have a free parameter, a free scale here, and they fit it in terms of the classical electron radius. And which means that in the daily life, there is essentially no difference between this model and the Maxwell. You have to go to, with the scaling, you have to go to scale like 10 to the minus 15 meters to see a discrepancy. So it's an atomic scale. Okay, so in case I forget the references, this is a crowded slide about the recent activity on this field. So, sorry, it's probably hard to read. But so the original purpose of the model was to fix the infinite energy problem in the classical electrostatic theory when you have a point charge. Because when you have a point charge in classical electrostatics, the electric field is unbounded, and the square, the L2 norm of the field is unbounded. So to cure that, one of the idea, which was precisely a Born idea, was to use a nonlinear fix pretty much the same as special relativity. That is, you give to yourself an upper bound for the electrostatic field, which plays the role of the speed of light in special relativity. And you cook up a Lagrangian, which has this upper bound in it with a square root. And when you play some algebra, you get the formula I gave to you. Okay. So, for instance, there is a brief, in this classical textbook, you can see some comments about this model. Okay, so it has been given up for a while, but now it's back in high-energy physics because it's related to these brains that I don't know so much about. So, there are very reasonable papers by Gary Gibbons about that. There is a very interesting attempt to fix the problem of quantum electrodynamics very recently this year by Mikhail Kisling in Rutgers using Born-in-Cell theory. There is a lot of geometry in Born-in-Cell. Actually, if you look at scalar version of Born-in-Cell, which would be like the wave equation with respect to the Maxwell equation. So actually you can see that these equations are minimal surfaces equation in Minkowski space. And there is a paper by Lindblad about that recently. Well, it's an interesting PDE from the hyperbolic point of view because this is a typical system where you have these null form structure, which is very important in hyperbolic equations. And there was a relationship with the theory of optimal transportation, which is the reason for which I got interested in that. Okay. And so, actually, if you go back to the 70s, there were quite a lot of papers on Born-in-Cells, and there is a nice summary by Guy Boyer in a lecture notes published in by Springer in 1994. Okay. So that's about the reference. Okay. So let me go back to this Born-in-Cell equation. So once again, here is the model. So you have this constitutive law with this non-quadratic function. And from the mathematical point of view, it has been known for a long time that these equations are hyperbolic. I mean, there are first-order PD, nonlinear PDEs. So there is it's homogeneous. There is no higher derivative than one, and therefore it's hyperbolic, which means that it's well posed, at least for small time intervals. But it's interestingly enough, it is linearly degenerate. So linearly degenerate is just a technical word in the field of hyperbolic conservation laws to say that the system will not produce shock waves, because generic nonlinear system of conservation law produce shock waves. Shock waves are singularities in the special derivative. But this Born-in-Cell system is an example of a linearly degenerate system, which is nonlinear but linearly degenerate. So there is no shock wave to be expected. So in contrast with most system of hyperbolic nonlinear conservation laws, the linear degeneracy gives a room to global smooth solution, at least for small data. So when you, for generic system of conservation law, you have shock waves, and so you don't have smooth solution. But here, this is possible. And actually, last year, several results were obtained. So there is a nice paper by Hans Lindblad, which is for a scalar version of BI, the one I mentioned earlier, which is just extremal surfaces in the Minkowski space. So it's a geometric PDE. And the same method was used last year by people from Korea, Chai and Hu, to prove that Born-in-Cells have global smooth solution for small data. So it was very lucky, because then I didn't have to prove it. So they did their job. And the technology is the null form method developed by Kleinerman. But there is a drawback with linear degenerate system, that for large data, the solution may blow up in soup norm. So there is no shock wave, but I mean you can have woof. So which is so let me just show you a very elementary calculation in 1D. Okay. And so the details of the calculation doesn't matter. You have different, each box corresponds to different time, and this is just a plot of a one-dimensional solution. And so this number fixes the level of energy, because this is a nonlinear system, so you cannot you change the solution when you multiply the initial data by a constant. Okay? And so it's a wavy solution, but now if you if you put a stronger energy, so you just multiply the initial condition by a factor of 4, then you see that the solution is very peaky, you know. So you expect some blow up in soup norm. Concentration effect. Okay. So the first observation I made last year, which probably, I don't know if it's new, that there is a nice way to write the Bonnefeld equation, which is the following. So the Bonnefeld equation are, maybe I should, I don't know if I can do that. I should have, okay. So Bonnefeld is just this. So you just write the nonlinearity. So dtb, this is E. You remember? The E is like, can be split in two parts. And so in this nonlinear formula, the V is a nonlinearity depending on D and this. D cross V divided by H, and H is the given by the formula we saw before. So this is Bonnefeld. And for any reasonable electromagnetic theory, you have additional conservation law which are related to the conservation of the energy momentum tensor. So you have the conservation of energy, which is here, dth plus the divergence of vh is zero. So v is d cross v divided by h, so vh is just the pointing vector, d cross v. So this is a classical law that you would have also for Maxwell equations. And the momentum conservation has the following formulation. So you have the dt of hv plus the divergence of hv tensor v minus bv plus dv divided by h is equal to the gradient of 1 over h. So any smooth solution of the Bonnefeld system satisfies this system of equation. And so, of course, you have this this closure formula for A, V and H, but you have the possibility to consider this system of equation, which has now 10 equations instead of 6, as a new system where you don't ask H, V, B and B to be depending from each other. You consider them as independent variable, and this is what I call the augmented Bonnefeld system. So it's not the same system, it's larger, and the proposition is a very trivial calculation showing that that you can rephrase in the following way: if your initial condition satisfies this algebraic closure relationship, then the closure formula is propagated, and therefore the augmented system contains as a subset of solution all the smooth solution of the Bonnefeld system. But of course, it contains more solutions. So it's an extension of the system. And of course, I mean, you already noticed that the system has some flavor of magnetohydrodynamics, a little bit. I should be careful about that, especially here, because you see that, for instance, the first equation, if you drop the right-hand side, is really an equation telling you that the magnetic field is transported by the velocity field, if you consider V as a velocity field. And also, these terms, these forcing terms for the momentum are not exactly the same, but similar to the one you would have in magnetohydrodynamics. Actually, you wouldn't get the H here. So you see that by extending the system, we have some kind of a couplet structure between an electromagnetic field, BD, and the fluid defined by density field H and the velocity field V. Of course, in the Bonnefeld system, this density is just the energy density, and the velocity is just the momentum related to the system. So they are not independent. Yes? Yes, sure. Yes, that's very important, yes. Yes, that's right. That's a very good point. So, actually, even from the calculation point of view, if you are interested in computing the propagation speed of the Born-Infeld system is not so obvious because it's quite nonlinear and it's messy. But if you write the extended system and you look, it's a trivial thing to compute the propagation speed, because when you look at solution depending on one space variable, there is a very nice decoupling between the electromagnetic part and the fluid part. And then you have to just to solve a 2x2 to diagonalize a 2x2 system to get the propagation speed. So it's a trick. I don't know if this kind of trick is known in but it's a nice trick to compute the eigenvalue. Okay. So there is a feature which is clearly linked to the linear degeneracy, is that when you look at this augmented system, it has a weak stability property, which means that if you take a sequence of solution to the system, well, you don't know whether they exist, but assume that you have a sequence of solution and they are uniformly bounded in L infinity, which is ruling out the concentration effect, then you use this classical trick, the so-called diff curl lemma, and you can prove that any weakly convergent subsequence will still be a solution of the equation. That's a very peculiar property. A generic system of nonlinear conservation laws will never have this property, because there is the commutation between nonlinearity and weak convergence is not possible in general, but here, because of the linear degenerate structure, it's possible. So this has some impact, because I should say that this is only true for solution depending on one space variable. But however, this means that by weak convergence you can approximate any state lying in the convex hull of the original Born-Infeld manifold by constructing oscillatory sequences. So actually, for the augmented system, it is more natural to consider not the original Born-Infeld manifold, which is a six-dimensional manifold in R10, because now we have 10 variables. We have B, D, H, and V. So the Born-Infeld manifold is six-dimensional, but we can compute the convex hull. So I was able to prove that the convex hull has full dimensionality, so it's 10-dimensional, so it's much thicker than the original set. And after challenging Denisser, I got the answer for the convex hull, so he computed the convex hull. And the convex hull is like this. It is given by this formula. So if you remember, maybe I should show you again the Born-Infeld manifold. So the Born-Infeld manifold was defined by two equality, algebraic equality. Now you have an inequality. So in particular, it means that you can take, provided you, and this, you satisfy this inequality, you can pick up as initial condition any state, and in particular, you are not obliged to take HV to B equals B. So, for instance, let's give you just one example. For instance, on the augmented manifold, well, we can take D and B to be zero, because the equation driving D and B are homogeneous. There is no contradiction without cancelling V. So, of course, on the BI manifold, you are not allowed to do that. On the BI manifold, V should be D cross B. So, if D and B are zero, V should be zero. But now, by weak convergence, you can manage to have an initial condition for which there is no electromagnetic field, but there is the fluid part. And then you get this fluid mechanics equation, dTH plus divergence HV, dTHV plus divergence HV is equal to gradient of 1 over H. So it's a funny gas equation where the so-called Chaplygin, where you have the sound of speed, you know, because usually in the classical gas dynamics, the pressure is like H to the gamma with a gamma larger than 1. But here, the pressure is like minus 1 over H. So it's a funny thing, because the speed of sound is really decaying when the density is very big. So which is completely consistent with this concentration phenomena, because I mean when the matter concentrates, it cannot be. So it's funny. I mean, I just last week I saw that this is. I mean, some people claim that this model is related to dark matter, but I have no idea. Maybe you can help me for that. Okay, so let me go back to the augmented Born cell system, and there is a nice property of the augmented system. The augmented system, you see that in the augmented system there is no square root at all. And as a matter of fact, if you do Galilean translation for the augmented system, so you shift you keep the time unchanged, you shift the space in the usual way, then you don't change the augmented system if you do the usual Galilean transform. So you don't change H, B, D, but you add U to the velocity field. So this seems to be very weird, because the Born-Infeld system has been built up. I didn't explain that at the beginning, but this is really a completely relativistic equation. So this is completely Lorentzian. But the augmented system is Galilean, and this seems to be a contradiction, and it's not, because you remember that if we stick ourselves on the BI manifold, then V is linked to D and B by a formula like V is D cross B divided by H, and this is not permitted. So this Galilean transform is permitted only for the augmented Born cell system, but fortunately the augmented Born-Infeld manifold is okay with this to some extent. So you have room to do this shift. And I started a computation that I have not yet finished, but it's pretty clear that if you add some symmetry requirement on the model, this is basically the only way to get a Galilean system. Because if you start with Maxwell, you start with linear Maxwell and you do exactly the same game, you add the conservation of the energy momentum tensor, but this is the equation you get, so this is fine, but you see you miss completely the HV cross V term. So this equation has nothing to do with the Galilean transform. So it's just because you had modified the Maxwell system in a nonlinear fashion that the extended system is Galilean. So I think it's interesting, because there are some other characterizations of the Born-Infeld equation, but this seems to be a quite interesting one. Okay. I'm very boring. Okay, so from the analytic point of view, there is a nice output of the Galilean invariance of the augmented system, that we have an additional conservation law for the augmented system. So the people in the conservation law theory, they call that an entropy. So I don't know if it's a good idea. But you get so this is also a surprising fact, because usually when you have a physical model, especially in a multidimensional system of PDEs, the fact that you have conservation law is it's very difficult to get extra conservation laws. So the conservation laws given by the energy momentum tensor are natural, but you don't expect anything else. So it's very strange that you can manage to get another conservation law for the extended system. So the conservation law is for this quantity. So this is d square plus b square plus hv square plus 1 divided by 2h. So you can notice that it's a convex function of the variable d, b, h, v, and h, which are the conserved quantity for the system of conservation laws. And there is this, so if I'm not mistaken, this is the conservation law you get. So how is it possible? Well, you can observe that this new quantity I introduced, if you restrict yourself on the BI manifold, right? So you have h is equal to the square root of the numerator. So actually eta is h squared on the BI manifold, it's h squared divided by 2h, so it's h. So in some sense, this equation is just a recycled equation of the equation we had before. So on the BI manifold, there is nothing new. But on the augmented manifold, this is something really new. And actually, there is a a well-known result in the theory of system of conservation law is when you have an extra conservation law like that with a convex function, for a convex function of the unknown, then the system is automatically hyperbolic. So in some sense, without doing any computation, I already know that my augmented system is hyperbolic. So which means locally well-posed and blah, blah, blah. But this has another, okay. So we will go back to this entropy function later, because this would be a tool for asymptotic analysis with this so-called relative entropy method. Yes. Yes. No, the fact that you have no, I didn't really think about that so far. Yes, that's a good idea to look at that. But you know, there is a PD output of that. This property, structural property, to have a convex quantity, is really important for the analysis of hyperbolic conservation laws. And you don't have that with the Bornstein system, actually. There is an extra conservation law, which is the conservation law for H. But H, if you remember the formula, the square root of 1 plus blah, 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 is not a convex function of D and B in the large. Yes, maybe I missed this point. I should have said that. Right? This, you know, we had already a conservation law for the Bornstein system with this quantity. But this quantity is convex near the origin, but not globally. So you can check that. This is a good exercise. So this function is not a convex function of D and B. So to get convex entropy, it seems that you have to go to use the extended system. So now I would like to do some a little bit of asymptotic analysis. Okay, so you can do several scaling for this equation, because I mean, of course the equation is nonlinear, so you can do you can look at different scaling. So there is the obvious scaling, which is the low field scaling, which goes back to the Maxwell equation as expected. So at the moment this is just formal, right? So you get the Maxwell equation. That's not surprising. There is another, I would call it, I don't know if it's the right word, but high field regime. So you rescale in the equation the field in this the following way. So lambda is a large parameter. So you rescale B like this, D like this, P like this, which is consistent with the Bornfeld manifold, and H also like this. And so you see that you get the following equation. So it's a more or less a pressureless gas, because the fluid part of the equation doesn't see anything from the magnetic part up to a 1 over lambda squared term error. And this equation is well known to describe, at least for short time, waves, particle moving. It's pressureless gas, so it's just particle moving, free streaming particles. Of course, this is not a global description of free streaming particles. We should use Vlasov equation instead. But at least locally in time, if you have smooth initial data, this will describe waves before focusing. Well, yes, I mean, I try to respect the scale of the Bornstein manifold, yes. I mean, for instance, you remember the formula for H? If I multiply B by lambda, I cannot keep H of order 1, for instance. This is what I mean. Just homogeneity of the manifold for large fields. There is a much more interesting rescaling, which is the following. I think you rescale B and D in a different way. So B is enlarged by a factor lambda, and accordingly P is rescaled like that, H like this, and what you get, you have something is kept from the electromagnetic part, but you keep only the magnetic field, and the magnetic field is transported by the velocity field. So this is pretty much like NHT. except that here the density shouldn't be here and there is no pressure. So I use the word pressureless MHD, so sorry if this is might be a confusing name, but I mean, it looks like a pressureless MHD. And this is the interesting model for which you can do some rigorous asymptotic analysis. And there is another model, so I didn't think at this model until recently, but because this scaling is not compatible really with the original Born-Hinfeld manifold, but it's compatible with the augmented one. So you rescale in a more homogeneous way all fields, B, D, H, and HV, and you get a model which is like that. So B and D are kept. And as we will see, this corresponds to membranes in some sense. But I'm going to explain that in a moment. So we have three examples of high field limits. And I would like to show you that at least for smooth initial condition and short time, this can be integrated explicitly in a very easy way. So they are not that complicated. So you use the following statement. So I consider, let me consider a family of diffeomorphism of the space. So it's like in elasticity, you see. You have some kind of deformation of the space. And so I will use the notation capital X for that. So S, R, and A are some parameters, and capital X is in R3, and I assume that this is for each T diffeomorphism, a nice diffeomorphism. And I also assume that for each value of A is just a parameter, that the X satisfies this linear PDE, which is like just a linear wave equation in the S and R parameter. So I have some coefficients alpha and beta, which are non-negative. And of course, you can argue, well, I mean, this is a wave equation. There is no reason for which the family should stay a diffeomorphism. And actually, you're right. I mean, this is in general incompatible, but there is a room for compatibility. So now you introduce the following fields. So it's a little crowded. So H of T and X is actually this is related to the Jacobian determinant of the diffeomorphism, and I like to use this notation for that. So I mean, this is a probability of the presence of a point belonging to S, R, and A can be seen as the particle labels, and X is just a deformation of the space. So you can define H this way, and accordingly you can define B to be the weighted average of DSX, the S derivative of capital X, D is the R derivative of capital X, and HV is the time derivative of capital X. And then you compute, assuming that everything is smooth. I mean, if X is a nice family of diffeomorphism, everything is smooth. And then you get this equation. So this is this is arithmetically enforced by this formula, so these three. This is just due to the structure of this quantity. And the last equation is related to the wave equation I wrote before. So you get this equation. So you see, this is just calculation. So you see that all the three high field regime I described are included in that. Because if I take alpha and beta equal to zero, this equation decouple, and I get the pressureless gas model for alpha equal zero, beta equal zero, which means that my original equation here is just dTTx is zero, which amounts to consider a continuous medium made of free streaming particles. Now, the pressureless MHD system corresponds to beta equal to zero, which means that you have a vibration only in the S parameter. So this is like vibrating strings. And then R and A are just parameter. And if you take alpha and beta equal to 1, you have the full thing. So this is summarized by this feature. Right? So this is... So you have the free string particles, the vibrating strings, so it's like spaghetti structure. The lasagna structure and maybe the polenta structure for the point, right? So you have these three possible regimes depending on the scaling you take. And so, right? What is polenta? Oh, you know, you should know. No, I mean, yes, depending on the parameter you take. So in some sense, you describe these nonlinear PDEs by a substrate, like a continuous, this is like the Eulerian description of a continuous medium described by some vibration. And you can consider that there is no vibration at all, so it's like free streaming particles. You can consider that you have vibration only in one direction, so it's like strings, or vibration on plates. I mean, membranes is maybe not the correct word for that, but so the vibration are, and then you get, depending on the scaling, you get these free regimes, right? And of course, the polenta regime is like a point particle in some sense, a continuum of point particles. So this is what I use. So of course, in the large, and this has to do a lot with the concentration effect, if you run a linear wave equation, even if you start with at rest, I mean, you take the particles in such a way that at time zero, the position of the particle is a density map, and you excite them by some vibration. In general, for large velocity, you will break down, because in the spaghetti case, they will cross each other, because they are independent, they don't interact. So they will be, in the point particle, they will focus, and in the membrane case, the lasagna will touch. So there will be reconnection problem in the string case. There will be a focusing problem in the point case, and with lasagna is like not al dente maybe. Right. Okay. So at this point, so let me do. Maybe if I have time, I will talk about the relative entropy method later, but I would like to show you a possible reconnection mechanism. Because we see that, actually, what is the game now? So we know that when the data are too big, there will be some breakdown. So which means that there will be some concentration effect in the Bordenfeld system. And so we'd like to try something to go beyond the singularity. And of course, this is not a well-defined problem, because we already know with much simpler example like Burgers that there are many ways of extending the equation beyond singularity depending on the discursive perturbation we can make, the viscous, etc. So there is not a well-defined problem. But I was happy to try a very simple-minded method for reconnection, which is the following one. So here, you can see that as a two-dimensional picture. So it's either you consider strings in two dimensions, or you can consider this is lasagna viewed from the side, right, with some symmetry. And so, of course, so you have a bunch of curves like that. So you have x1. So I will use. I consider that x1 is equal to f, which is possible, and x2 the. The vertical coordinate will be given by some function, capital Y, subject to the wave equation, right? Because if it's a string, of course, it should be like that. And if you have membranes, there is no dependence on the transversal variable. Okay, so here is the scheme. And I did the code. So in each, you have a time discretization. This is my philosophy, time discretization, always. So you solve the string equation in the time interval, and the key point is really, it took some time for me to figure out it. So you have to write that as a first order system, this is important. And at the end of the time step, you rearrange the y, so you have the solution y, and this might be not increasing with respect to the parameter a. So at the beginning you assume that they are layered on top of each other, so which means that the function y is an increasing function of a. But because of the vibration, you have some crossing, and Y is not anymore an increasing function of A. So you do increasing rearrangement. So increasing rearrangement at the discrete level, if A is a discrete variable, it's just permutating the values in increasing order. So very simple, sorting. And then you rerun the next time step. But if you look carefully, this amounts to a change in velocity. So when you have two curves crossing each other, it means that you assign the velocity of the top, for instance, of the top curve to the lower curve and conversely. So it's an exchanging velocity process when you have some crossing. Right? And so it turns out that this scheme is extremely easy to analyze. And you have a theorem that this time-discrete scheme has some uniform contractivity property in L2. And it converges to a solution, YV, which is uniquely defined. So it's a well-posed problem. And you have some formulation. So I'm not completely sure. Oh, I didn't finish it, actually. Well, yeah, because I was not sure. I mean, there is some formula. It's classified. It's classified. Don't tell me. Okay, there is a formulation. So this time, I went up to the formulation. And there is a nice thing. This is fully consistent with the thing you can do in the case where you have no vibration, where you have pressureless gas, and the same scheme is known to be convergent, and this corresponds to the adhesion dynamics. That is, sticky particles. The particles, when they run in each other, they stick. So it's not very exciting. So there is no elasticity, there is dissipation, so they just stick. So this is a generalization of that for strings. No, but there is some regularity, actually. Actually, you get the H1 regularity. Yes, so DTX and DSX are in L2, so which corresponds to the energy. Yes, but this is in the Lagrangian variable. It doesn't mean anything for the Born-Yves system. Actually, this is fully compatible with constraint. Oh, yes, here there is an open question. So I am not able to prove that this solution solves the Born-Yves, the augmented system in the weak sense. So that's an interesting question. Okay. So here you can do a very similar model. And I would like to show you some computation. It's more or less the same idea. So assume that on the real line you have a finite number of masses linked with springs, okay, linear springs. So if you don't put any constraint, the mass can cross each other, right, by vibration. No. So I would like to see what is the corresponding mechanism for collision here, right? Because I mean this is kinetic mating, so I should talk about collisions, right? And so. Because it's a generalization of the sticky particle algorithm, you could expect that, and what I thought at the beginning, that when these springs, not strings now, springs, so strings can be seen approximated by a sequence of springs, right? When these springs, the mass touch, I expected that to be sticky forever. But it's not, actually. If you run the computation with the same algorithm, here what you get. So here I have a finite 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 masses with springs. And this is the time, this is the position in the real line, and the vertical coordinate is the time. So you see that I put random velocity, I mean, this is a very small set of randomness, but you see that at the beginning the mass, they collide, the particle collide, and the behavior here is pretty much the same as sticky particles. You know, you have the classical rule for sticky particles is when two particles collide, they have the same mass and they get the momentum is conserved, and of course the kinetic energy is dissipated in this process. But you look at that later. So I don't know if it's a well-known mechanical model. I don't know. Maybe I'm rediscovering something. But you see that they can detach. right, after a while. So you see, then they split. But they split, you see that there is no angle here. So actually, the I would say like it's a little bit like clay motion. So when you have, if you project some clay on the roof, so that it will stick more or less, right? I'm not sure it's correct from the mechanical point of view, but it will stick, and the time it will stay stuck will depend on the energy you put, right? So if your energy was very, very small, then the clay just fall down again. And this is exactly what happens here. So sometimes the mass, they stick, and then they split with with you at zero speed. And then we enter, and then they can recollide again, you see, with another one, and you get this tree structure. This was my scheme, so I don't know if it's mechanical, but the scheme does that. So maybe it's a well-known rheological model. I didn't check the rheology. No, but it's a well-posedness principle, because think about that. If you have two masses, they approach to each other very, very, very closely. So then they will continue vibrating. So if I had sticky particles, this would be very wrong. I mean, this would be not stable with respect to initial conditions. Because when they stick, they will stay very far away from the situation where you would have almost a collision. So, I mean, this might be bad or not. Here we are just discussing models. So in this model, you have continuity with respect to initial conditions. If you had a purely sticky system, this would be not continuous with respect to initial conditions, right? Because, I mean, the almost collision is like that. So if you stick forever, it's not continuous. So the only way is stick, but very shortly after that, it's split. So this is a way to get the well-posedness. So just another one, because it's the same kind of what is it? So it looks like a railroad. So yeah, sorry. Oh yeah, but this is built in this formulation in some sense. So because it's the fact that you use the two variables x and u. So in some sense x. I mean, because it doesn't seem causal, or it seems that there is a memory effect, but the memory effect is due to the U variable, or the V variable, maybe I use V. So the X variable doesn't seem to be, yeah, because otherwise it doesn't look Markovian, I would say. But actually, this is because the U is still acting. So this is the memory effect is in the variable U. So I don't know if maybe it's a well-known mechanical model. Yes, in some sense, you see a projection. So U is still working for you and preparing the detachment. Right. Okay, so I think it's, if you like random models, I think it would be fun to extend this Borderlands theory, which has been, in particular in Nice, has been a very successful theory, which consists in considering the stochastic behavior of sticky particles, in some sense. So you can do that with sticky springs. And so this is a typical, this is like a continuous approximation, where you have a lot of many, many springs, and with random initial velocity, and you see that there is this enormous amount of dissipation at the beginning, because there is a lot of collision. And after that, you have this splitting phenomena again. But then, if you run the computation, because the scheme has a nice property to be absolutely exact for piecewise constant initial condition. So there is no extra, when you code the scheme, the time discrete scheme is exact on your computer. And then you see that after a while, I mean, according to the experiment, all solution seems to become periodic in time and non-dissipative. So in some sense, it is like a little bit like an attractor. So you start with a dissipative mechanism, and then after a while, there is you have dissipated enough energy so that the springs, they can just vibrate without colliding. And then the solution is very nice. And since the scheme is absolutely conservative, I mean, if you code the wave equation with CFL1 number. And this is an example with this, sorry? Yes. Oh, this I don't know. Yes, this I don't know. Yes. You're right. But here, for instance, you see the pattern. For instance, you at the beginning there is it, and then you see that here you have a pattern which is periodic space-time. And I think here this is, there is no longer any concentration of this time. For instance. But at the beginning there is a lot of fighting. And after that, it's, the peace is starting. Okay, so okay, just to show you that I can prove some theorem. So by the so-called relative entropy method, for instance, you have this is a typical theorem you can do. So of course, I quote that because there is a heavy cheating at some point. So you take a solution of the one of the high field models. So for instance, here this is the pressureless energy equation. So you take a solution of that. And so the theorem say that if you take any weak entropy solution, so weak solution to the Born-in augmented system with the same initial condition up to the rescaling, because you need to rescale the initial condition, then you have the following estimates for the discrepancy between the two solutions. So the star solution is the high field limit, and the without star is the Born-in-Feld weak solution. And you get this kind of energy estimate, and this is actually a relative entropy. So this is exactly the quantity you would get from the entropy by Taylor expanding it about the limit solution. And actually, I am happy to use the word relative entropy because this has been used in the framework of hyperbolic conservation laws for, I mean, the concept has, goes back at least to Costas da Fermos in the 70s. So this is definitely a concept in hyperbolic conservation law. And so, here, sorry? Which is? Yes, very good. But in the context of conservation laws, or? Oh, okay, I would be interested in knowing exactly that, because I was curious about the origin of this idea. And so, here I should tell you that this theorem is actually more or less empty because we don't know whether there are global weak solutions. Actually, the reconnection mechanism I described is an attempt to build up weak solutions. But I don't know because I have a formulation which is very nice, 12 poles, but I'm not sure that this new formulation corresponds to weak solutions of the original system. I don't. It's a difficult problem. And it's like in a pressureless gas equation. And so we don't know whether such a weak solution exists, but there is a nice feature in this estimate is that the bound here involve a constant which depends only on the limit solution. So which is due to the fact that the entropy, the structure of the entropy we have because of the augmentation of the system is almost quadratic. So if you are familiar with relative entropy reasoning, usually you have to put some L infinity bound. But here you don't need it because the algebra is very nice, and therefore it means that any reasonable concept of weak solution will do the job. You don't need to know anything about it except that it exists, which is this has been a discussion for religion for many years, right? Okay, so thank you for your attention, and that's it.